The power of stillness and listening to people? What?
Welcome to the Joyous Expansion Podcast. I'm your host, Brett Dupree, scouring the globe to bring you stories of courage, passion, and resilience. If I could sum up this podcast into one word, I would use empathy. Now let's get inspired.
Welcome to the Joyous Expansion Podcast. I am your host once again, Brett Dupree, here to drop some spiritual knowledge on you. Today, I talked to Daniel Levin, who talks a lot about listening to other people and the power of listening and how listening changed his life. So now you're going to be listening to me as I talk about my story, because basically, if I don't talk about myself, how can I expect my guests to be vulnerable if I am not being vulnerable? So today is March 26th of 2020, and if you are on planet Earth, you have a basic idea of what is going on March 26th, 2020, as I am sure this is not going to be forgotten in a while, which is the coronavirus COVID-19. I have been stuck at home for at least 2 weeks now. Today I took a venture out and took a 15-minute drive to keep my batteries up on my car and keep things working a little bit. Plus, it was just nice to get out of the house. Even if it was for just a drive, I didn't stop anywhere. I just drove around my neighborhood, got a better understanding of where I live. Since I moved down to Renton, I don't really know where things are after living in Bellevue for like 14 years. I knew I just had a great lay of the land in Renton. I still kind of feel like a visitor as I don't know where anything really is. And today I have a better understanding of it because of that drive. But the thing I really want to talk about is positive aspects of this issue. Number one, I don't like the idea of jumping right to the positive. I thought a lot of people were jumping too soon to the positive, which you could probably tell from if you check out my Church of Awesome, my last two that I talked about, and my last two podcasts where I did talk about a lot of my spiritual friends making me angry with their trying to put a spiritual side on this thing. In fact, it was just yesterday that one of my well-meaning friends, or the day before, was sending me this video of this person talking over this sweet, mystical music about how we should thank you coronavirus for blah 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 blah. I'm like, no, forget that. I am not ready to thank this coronavirus. COVID-19's disease, was it SARS-CoV-2 or something like that? Whatever. So SARS-MERS-2, I believe, is his real name. I should have looked it up. But anyway, I don't care. It is a piece of crap and I hate it and I'm mad at it. It sucks. But there are ways to look at positivity from this. Because if you just go into the banality of the existence of life and think everything and we're all going to die, even though one of the reasons why I stayed at home is because I read that people in my situation do have a decently high, not high enough death rate. I mean, anytime you have a roll of one dice 10 and one of the numbers means that you could die, probably a good idea not to, you know, to stay home as much as possible. But anyway, what I'm saying is, basically, the important part of looking at positive aspects, because if you do nothing but look at the negative aspects, it will crush you. I believe worry is a waste of time, and worrying is just constantly thinking of what can happen in a negative state. I believe in being realistically optimistic. Basically, being realist as looking at reality for what it is, but at the same time, also being optimistic and believing that even though these bad things can happen, well, let's hope for the best. Let's look at the best. Let's look at the positive aspects of it. So I did my 2.5 weeks or month of kind of freaking out. I mean, part of my hope is that this would stay in China and the Asian countries and we would do what we're supposed to do here in America, but we haven't. We've done a bad job and I think the United States is going to be the epicenter of this disease and it's going to hit us and hit us hard. What the world's going to look like after this, I do not no, but one thing I do know, are there a lot of things to look at? You can pay attention to all the bad news, or you can pay attention to the people out there who are helping, the people out there who are doing a good job, and taking, it's like the Serenity Prayer, where you want to have the wisdom to basically worry about the things you can control. And all I can control for myself is to do this, is to connect with friends as best I can, and to do my best to have a positive attitude that if I do everything right, I will come out of this okay, and we will come out of this okay as a nation. I will do my part because that's all I can do, and I can cheer other people on who are also doing that. So being realistic, taking the problem as it is, having those cries. It's okay to cry. I had my COVID-19 cry. I cried. I cried for the world. I cried because I can't see my girlfriend. I cried because I'm freaking scared that if I get this, that I am going to die. I'm scared that, you know, society is going to crumble a little bit. There's some of that fear there. And just feeling it and just allowing that to push through me. Because it's okay to be afraid. It's okay to be sad. But now I just feel it. I don't feel lifted. I just feel this feeling of growth in a way. Not even growth. No, that's the wrong word. I just feel this feeling of acceptance. I have a better acceptance of what has happened. I have a better acceptance of my feelings, and I have a better acceptance about what's to come. And to be sad about it doesn't help me. It makes me less effective. It makes me want to eat more. It makes me want to go outside and do the things that could increase my chances of getting this and increase making me somebody who hurts nurses by having to go to the hospital. That increases my chance. When you are in that stress state, you make worse decisions. When you are in that stress state, your immunity system does go down. But you have to also be realistic about it. You have to truly process and do your best, like get therapy if you can get that call, or call your friends and really talk about it. Really talk about your feelings and your fears, because if you bottle them inside, then they will explode, or you'll have to look for conspiracy theories because you want someone or something to blame, some gigantic cabal out there. And basically speaking, there are good things happening. There are people who are helping others. There are people who are making amazing sacrifices right now. We are better together. That is the truth. That's one thing that makes, in all my research in personal development and human evolution, the thing that I learned most of all is individualism is pure BS. What matters is our collectivism. When we can make it positive towards the betterment of our group, and once we realize we're all one group, we can truly shine. And you see a lot of that today. And I know at March 26th, the worst is yet to come. And there can be upwards of 600,000 people dead by the end of next month because of this, now that I have a better understanding of exponential growth, which I guess is a positive because I took an entire class on limits and infinite series. And then I took calculus. I never really got an understanding of the purpose of them. But then I saw that, I basically saw somebody do epidemiological science of exponential growth of diseases. And all of a sudden, I was back in college and I was like, why didn't they just teach us this? I mean, number one, pandemics are interesting because, you know, scary as heck. I can't believe I'm in a worldwide one right now. I mean, sheesh. This is just ridiculous. It's like Mount Rainier erupt. But I hope that's not an ironic thing I just said. But basically, you know, it's just having a better understanding of it. So yeah, while looking at the positive people, and also another thing that I noticed, especially in my life, like I think I've been just in a state of anxiety since 2015. Like just this five, because I'm just noticing a lot of times in my last 5 years where I've gotten angry at people, even the last couple weeks, and people I've unfriended, I kind of shouldn't, but I was just, I have that pent up, I think I just have, just having that awareness of that pent up energy that I have, and just how petty and small it looks when I truly think about what this is, and just something about this just makes me understand the grand scale of life and the grand scale of things. And the fact that this is bigger than almost anyone, just listening to people doing petty squabbles online about this and knowing this, just this is going to be not fun. But at the same time, one of the positive aspects is being able to do self-reflection and think to myself of what I can do to become better, because that's all I can do. I have a choice for me to make myself better or to make myself better. And I have to be honest, for too long, even though I even used those words, even though I had speeches where I talked about that, even the last 5 years, I think I even used that line. But I have been making myself bitter in a lot of ways. This is not 100%. Some places I make myself better. A lot of places I made myself bitter. One of my favorite sayings is, if you don't look back at yesterday and marvel how naive you were, you're standing still. And maybe it just takes a global epidemic to make me realize how naive I was yesterday. All the petty just anger that I got from certain people, all the things I get mad at certain people, all the things in my life that, you know, in the gigantic scheme of things, it isn't a big deal. And what I'm dealing with now is scarier than all those things put together. And by what I'm dealing with, I'm talking about the entire freaking world is dealing with, is scarier than all that put together. I mean, just the sober realization that someone I know is probably going to die in the next 6 months. And it's probably going to be multiple, because I have like 1,000 friends on Facebook. I'm just saying, chances are someone I know, someone I care about is going to die. But that is reality. But right now, I'm going to choose to live. Connect with your loved ones. Life is precious. This is a gift. Let's do our best with it. I love you for who you are. And I don't know how to segment from that into my interview with Daniel Levin. So I will do that this way. Interview with Daniel Levin. Daniel walked away from an opportunity to run a $1 billion business to hitchhike around the world to find happiness and inner peace. People thought he was crazy, but he had the courage to walk away from what everyone else was doing and create a life and a company that connected him with his purpose. He's done it. And if you're ready to connect to your purpose, Daniel will help you as well. Here's my interview with Daniel Levin. Hello, Daniel, and welcome to my podcast.
Hey, Brett, how you doing? Nice to be here.
It is nice to have you. Could you give people a brief introduction to who you are?
I am who I've always been, which is something that never changes. But through the course of my life, it appears on the outside to have changed. I have had the opportunity to sit with some of the richest people in the world at the dinner table with their families and be lucky enough to call them my friends. And at the same time, I've sat with some of the poorest people that you've ever wanted to meet. And I've sat on their cardboard boxes with them and shared a loaf of bread and a piece of cheese. Had the opportunity to call them my friends. And one of the things I realized, Brett, is that no matter how rich you are, how poor you are, no matter what color your skin, no matter what size your body, no matter what your religion, no matter what your political beliefs, no matter what side of the border you live on or what you think, all of us essentially want the same thing. We want to be listened to and heard. We want to be loved and accepted. We want to be validated and appreciated. And I realized that I could do that for people. It doesn't take a college degree. It doesn't take a ordination in some religious organization. It just takes the kindness of a human heart to listen to another person and sit with them with full attention. And what I found, Brett, in doing that is that in every single time, just like in my book, The Mosaic, the main character, Mo, sat with people. Every single time he sat with people, every single time I've sat with people, the person that I've walked away from is a completely different person than I walked up to, because we are not what we appear to be. And when we take a moment to let people tell us their stories, the people we see emerge completely differently than the people we originally saw.
That's very profound. So I'm interested in hearing your story. When you're growing up, did you feel like you were heard and you were listened to?
Great question. I lost my mom and dad when I was a kid. They died 2 years apart on the same day. When I sit with it in answering your question, what I think comes to mind right now is that I always felt like I was different. So I guess I didn't feel heard. I felt like who amongst my friends, who amongst the people I knew, didn't have a mom and a dad. And even though I lived with an aunt and uncle who were economically changed the course of my existence, I went from a lower middle class family to an upper high echelon family. I really didn't feel like people understood what I was going through. I didn't understand what I was going through. And so I think as a result of me not being able to hear what my own voice was saying to me, I never felt like other people heard me either.
Wow, that must have been a culture shock.
Huge culture shock. But it was a good reverse, going from having nothing to going to having everything. People look at you different. When I was... And partly what happened is my uncle wanted to give me, saw me and said, it was in a time where people didn't give over their businesses to their daughters. That fortunately has changed. But in those days, people didn't do that. And after about a month, or 2 months, he looked at me and said, I want to start you pushing a broom, and I believe in a 10-year period of time, you'll sit in my chair. I will mentor you and help you and show you and teach you. And he didn't even tell his wife about it. He just said, this is our secret. Let's just do this together. And I said, that is so kind of you. And I would like a year to live here to watch you to see if that's the life that I want. And so he said, you know what? 99.99999% of the people in the world would have just said, where's the broom? Thank you. When do I start? He said, I said, well, too bad for both of us that I'm that point, oh, 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 say oh until you can't say more, then say one. But that's who I am. And he said, well, that's what interests me about you. Long story, already too long. I watched him for a year. We had a lunch together and I walked away from that opportunity.
An interesting thing that you were saying earlier was that you felt you were different than other people. But one thing I've noticed in my life and also doing this podcast is how everyone feels that way. Everyone feels that they are different. And in that way, we're kind of the same.
It's one of the beautiful things that I want to do on this trip that I was talking about to you a little bit about in the green room that I'm about to on a lifelong trip. I'm going to start with a trip around the United States, and then I'm going to go around the world. And I want to just sit with people that people don't listen to normally. I just want to speak with them, and I want to video them and record them. And my goal is to make a movie to talk about what the voice of the voiceless are saying. And I think that just like you're saying here, Brett, on the surface, we all look so different and we all feel so different. When we don't allow ourselves the time to have a conversation with each other, we all feel alone in what we're going through. But the more we open up and speak with each other, the more vulnerable we become, the more we take down the walls that protect us and show ourselves to be who we really are, the more we start to see that everyone feels the things we feel. They may have different names on their scorecard, or they may have different events that have happened, but each and every one of us feels that same desire to be heard, to be loved and accepted, to be listened to and heard, to be acknowledged and validated. We all feel in one way or another that we're different, that we're alone, but we're really not that different. We're really not that alone. And when we realize how connected we are, The Mosaic, the book that I wrote, is a book all about connection. And when we realize that we were never intended to live life alone, we were never intended to play this game alone, we were never intended to build our businesses alone or our families alone, we're connected to each other. And when we listen to each other and hear each other and speak with each other and talk openly with each other, we can do so much more than we ever dreamed possible on our own.
So after you walked away from having a chance to run a $1 billion business, what did you end up doing?
I ended up hitchhiking around the world. I went to college for 2 years. I studied psychology, and I was looking for the answer to why my parents got taken from me. I was looking for where they were, and what I write about in my book, The Mosaic. When Mo, the main character, asked the adults where his parents went, they told him they were in a place called heaven. So he set out in search of the place called heaven. And it wasn't until I really finished writing that book that I realized that's what I had done. I didn't realize that's what I was doing in the beginning. I realized that's what I had done at the end. That all these beautiful things that had happened to me in this lifetime, all these amazing opportunities that most people would have run after with 1,000 different arms, they just weren't my heaven. They weren't the place that I was looking for. They weren't that perceptual shift in consciousness that would allow me to understand that together we're stronger than we are individually. And somehow that just happened for me.
I find that is one of our mistakes that we make as an American society. You can see it in our movies and the people we champion, this idea of the lone gunman who can save the world, or the fact that we like prop up the Elon Musks and the Steve Jobs when they had complete teams and factories and all these people working for them and also helping them with their decisions. The fact that we like to prop up this single individual when in reality, we are so much better together.
One of the things The Mosaic has taught me is that there is an exquisiteness to being ordinary. And we live in a world where everybody, when I ask people on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being what you long to be and 1 being what you hate to be, where do you put the word ordinary? Most people will give me a 1 or a 2 as an answer. Nobody wants to be ordinary. When I ask him in that same scale, where do you place the word extraordinary? People give me a 10 or a 20 or a 50. They'll say, boy, we want to be extraordinary and we want our kids to be extraordinary. And I say, well, maybe it's an interesting thing in the English language, but tell me this. If you don't want to be ordinary, why do you want to be extra of something you don't want to be? And they go, well, I mean, that's not what we're talking about. I said, well, but that's what the word's talking about. And really what the mosaic taught me is when you bring together extraordinaries, extraordinary things happen. What's more beautiful than a sunrise? And a sunrise is completely ordinary. It happens every single day. What's more beautiful than a bud appearing on a tree or a flower appearing in spring when it's been barren all winter? And it happens every year, the same time in spring of the same season. What's more beautiful than day turning into night and night turning into day? And day can try and say night won't happen, but the world doesn't care what day says. Night will happen after day. So why is it that we have to be extraordinary? Why do we have to have superpowers? Why do we believe we have to be more than we are? It just creates a society of self-loathing people who can never live up to the expectation of what they think they have to be and always fall down into who they are, which is if they would realize how extraordinarily beautiful being ordinary is, you would never want to be anything other than what you are.
Keep on mentioning your book, The Mosaic. When and what was the catalyst of you deciding to actually sit down and write a book?
Being older, I'm about to turn 65 this year. And when I turned 60, I said, for anybody who might be interested, I'd like to leave a legacy. I've had a very interesting life. I'd like to write down what I believe and what I think and leave something for people. And I wrote a book that was really very relevant for me at that time. And I called it V2. And it was the second version of your life. What would that second version of my life look like? Because what I found is most people live their life and then they get a little bit older, they retire, and they don't have a second version of their life. They think their life is over, like the pieces of a mosaic. They are no longer what they used to be, but they're a broken off piece of what they used to be. And people look at that and allow life to end for them in those moments. And so I thought, I'm going to write V2 and I'm going to make it a 9-step guide to living the second version of your life. And I sent it off to a friend of mine who I just actually met for the first time. I only knew her through internet. I actually met her for the first time in the last few days. She's an incredible editor and she became my muse. And she read it and she said, Danny, this book is really extraordinary, but it's not your book. And I said, what are you talking about? She said, you've written a self-help book and you're not a self-help person. You don't even believe in teaching people or self-help. You're a storyteller. You tell people stories. And in those stories, you intoxicate people with their own rendition of the story. The beautiful thing about a story is when I say a story, it comes out of my mouth. But by the time it gets into your ears, you've already interpreted it in some way to become your story. So she said, why don't you write a story? And I said, what do you want me to write? Like a fable? And she said, yeah, that's exactly what I want you to write. And I said, are you kidding me? And I fought her for about a minute and a half until I realized the brilliance of what that would be. Because in a story, there is no teacher, but the story itself gives over a message. And people can interpret that message any way they want. They can create a new message through it. I ended up writing it. I thought it would take me about 2 or 3 months to do because I'd written a story to help brand a hotel in Maui that was one of the most anticipated hotels openings of 2014. It took me 2 months to write that. And I thought this will be an easy book to write because it's the story of my life. 2.5 years later, I was completely frustrated, completely annoyed, bothered by this whole thing because I would write what I thought was great and I would lose it. I would wake up the next morning and it would be gone or wiped clean from my computer or the file would be disrupted or distorted or virus. Somehow everything I wrote was taken from me over the course of 2.5 years. It kept happening over. Or I would write it in the evening and I would think it's great. I'd wake up in the morning and I'd say, no, this isn't really good at all. And finally, I did something really crazy. Outwardly, it would seem crazy. I sat with the book and I asked the book, what are you trying to say? I sat with the characters and I said, why do you keep erasing everything I say? And here's the crazy part, Brett. I literally heard the characters one by one speak to me. These are characters that I created, but they had a voice. And they spoke to me and they said, we don't want to say what you're writing us saying. We want you to say what we're telling you we want to say. Just write that. And I thought, okay, wow, this is wild. Let's see what happens. And when I listened to what they wanted to say, the book then was done in about 3 months. And what it showed me is everything in the world has a voice. Everything in the world is speaking to us. It's not just people. When we're having problems with our businesses, all we need to do is ask our business, what is it you're trying to tell us? And if we listen to it, it will tell us. When we're having problems with environmental things, all we need to do is ask the environment, what is it you want from us? And when we listen to it and follow what it says, we'll find peace in that. When you listen to the characters in the book that you're writing and say what they want to say, the book gets written quickly. It's a wild realization, but it's a message that I really want to give to the world, which is, especially from a guy who talks as much as I do, what would happen if we listened more and less?
I really enjoyed what your friend told you, because story is very important. That's how we used to convey everything in our lives, was to sit around the campfire after a day of hunting and just telling stories, passing down our history, giving children our lessons. There's just such a powerful, stories are just powerful to the human experience.
Buckminster Fuller said, "You can't solve the problems of today with the thinking of today. What's needed is to create a new paradigm that makes this old paradigm obsolete." And what I think is happening is we live in a society where we teach people things, where leaders lead us, where self-help people tell us what we're doing wrong, where governments rule us, where we're told what to do by our parents. We live in a vertical reality where a few people guide the masses of people. And I think the new paradigm that's coming is a story paradigm. It's a paradigm of what would happen if we all lived in a horizontal reality. What would happen if nobody was better or worse? What would happen if we were a mosaic where every piece, no matter how big or small, no matter what color, no matter what shape, no matter what texture, all just came together to create something bigger than themselves, something more beautiful than themselves, something that they could never have on their own. But this beautiful artistry that is what happens when together we build the world that we were supposed to build. What would that world look like? What would it look like if we came away from the sides, one side against another, and just came into the middle and just started to see, where do we connect? Instead of looking at where are we different, where do we find, if you look at a mosaic, sometimes pieces only connect corner to corner, meaning only like a very small part of that piece is connected to a very small part of another piece. But that small connection is enough to keep the mosaic whole. But in life, we look at those small connections that we have and think about all the differences that we have, and we focus on the differences. And a small perceptual shift from focusing on differences to focusing on what we share in common would entirely change the way we see our world. That's the world that I'm looking to create now.
So in adopting this philosophy, what has been the biggest change in your life that you've seen for yourself?
I think I went from being someone who knew it all to someone who realized how little I know. I think I've always been a person, Brett, who felt like I could do it better on my own, that I know my capabilities. I know how quickly I can get something done. I know that I'll do it right if I do it myself or right for me. And moving from a reality where I create everything on my own to understanding how important and how desperately I need a team of people and to work with, not a team of just under me, but a group of people that we work together with, that we stand united as horizontal partners in life, where each one comes to the table giving what they love to do to the field that we're involved in, where walking into a room, I'm about to go to around the world and give gatherings rather than workshops. And in workshops, what I tend to see is one person addressing a group of people. And I think, what a waste of energy and what a waste of time and what a waste of talent. There are all these people in the room that have so much to give, and they're sitting all day listening to one or two or five people speaking. What would happen if we reversed that whole thing? And what would happen if we invited people in the room to share with each other? How would that look? What would that bring for us? How would that change the way we perceive the world that we live in? What solutions would we see that we can't see on our own? One of the big things the mosaic has taught me is that we live in a world where we see what we see, but we don't see so much. there's so much more to see than the world that we see. In my book, when Mo sat with these people and saw what they saw, the trash man and the homeless guy and the street artist and the waitress and the gardener, what he saw initially was nothing at all as to who they really were, but he thought he knew who they were. And in spending time with them, he saw so much more. What's in the space between the things that we see? What perceptual shifts would it take for us to learn to see what we don't see? You know, they have that beautiful black and white drawing. It's not beautiful, but I like it because it's just so, it so explains this point. Where one way, when you look at it, it looks like an old hag, and the other way you look at it, it looks like a young socialite. Do you know the picture I'm talking about?
Yeah, I've seen it.
And the beautiful thing about that picture is when you see one thing, when you see the old hag, you can't see the socialite. Initially, the first time I saw it, I saw an old hag. They said, "What else do you see?" I said, "What are you talking about there?" "I see an old hag." They said, "Do you see a young socialite?" I said, "What are you, crazy? It's an old hag." And they said, "Just keep looking at it. Just keep looking at it." Suddenly, the same, very same thing I once saw one way, suddenly I saw it completely different. I saw the socialite, and then I couldn't see the old hag. That's the way our life is. What we see is only what we see. It isn't what is. And life itself has more than just one other image in it. It has many other things in the same thing that we're looking at that we're just not able to see because we see what we do see. Our solutions now, Brett, to the problems that we haven't been able to solve are in the innovative approach to a perceptual shift that allows us to see differently. That's the type of work that I do with people. I help them to perceptually shift what they see when they look into the world that they're living in and see it differently. And then see it differently again, with the hope that in something that they see, some new way of seeing the world will give them a new solution to a business problem, a relationship problem, a world problem they never saw before. And that real problems get solved by simply moving aside what we see to see what's actually there in addition to what we see. Does that make sense?
That does make sense. So you work with people one-on-one then, or is this just through the gatherings?
I work with people one-on-one. I work with companies to shift their, to align their shift. I work with government people. I work with anybody and any organization that says, what I see isn't working for me right now, because I just continue to do what I always do. And I'm not finding, I want to do something different and I don't know how. And I have so much sympathy and so much understanding, because when I saw the old hag, I didn't know how to see the socialite. But it's almost as if what we have to do is we have to relax so that what we see can disintegrate and what is there can be shown to us. And that process takes some time sometimes, or it can take just a second, depending on how ready and how willing we are to let go of what it is that is holding us back from seeing something different.
Awesome. So we are coming to the end of our time together. And one thing I like to ask my interviewees, or guests, if you will, is for a 1 minute of motivation. You can think of this as if you have a time machine traveling back to your 8-year-old self, and you want to convey everything you need to know in life to be able to succeed and live a good life. But unfortunately, you have a minute before you're taken back into the future. Or you can think of it as condensing your entire life's message into a minute.
Yep. With a friend of mine who is homeless, I watched him for a while. I asked him if I could sit with him, and he said, "Please, I would welcome that." And as I sat with him, I said to him, "What have you seen as you've sat here?" And he said, "The most amazing thing happened, Danny. As I sat here initially, I watched people go by, and people would pass me sometimes 8, 10, 12 times a day, because I would be on the corner by where they work and they would pass by me. And I would see in some people scorn and disgust. They thought of me as if I was worse than an animal. And they looked at me with such hatred and such venom. And I realized I didn't even want the quarter that they were going to bring out of their pocket. But what I wanted to do is I wanted to give them a gift. And I sat here and I prayed for them silently. And in praying for them silently, something miraculous happened. Over the course of a period of time, it didn't happen instantaneously. Some people started to stop and they just started to stand here. And I didn't say anything to them. They didn't say anything to me. And then over the course of a little more time, they would come and they would put pictures by my hat where my money collection was. And they said to me as they were leaving, "Will you do for these people in the pictures what you've done for us? Because they need some help." And I asked him, "How did that shift happen?" He said, "Because I just loved and listened and I heard." And I asked him, "What would be one thing you would tell people if you could tell people?" And this is what he said. "If people would take 10 minutes out of the course of their lifetime and sit with somebody they don't know and ask them, 'How are you?' and really listen to them, I believe the world would be a different place. So I would like to invite the listeners here to take 10 minutes out of the course of their life. 10 minutes in the course of a lifetime is nothing. And sit with somebody you don't know and listen and see what happens.
Thank you, Daniel. And thank you again for being on my podcast. I really enjoyed listening to your story of how going around and listening to people and truly listening to people is very important. I've always liked Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, the one seek to understand before being understood, and seeing how you put that into practice to help people shift their perspective and to give, honestly, one of the greatest gifts that you can truly give somebody, which is to just take a moment to listen to them so they can feel truly heard, as we do live in a society that is kind of disconnected through our way we do our work week, as well as social media, as well as just generally how we built the society. So thank you so much for coming on my podcast and sharing your story. And thank you so much for everything you do in this world.
It is my honor. Thank you for having me.
May your day be special.
And to you.
And there you have it, folks. That is my interview with Daniel Levin. I very much enjoyed his talk of stillness and listening. I especially think listening is the most important thing. Most conversations I've had in my entire life. And before I learned about the seven habits of highly effective people, is how rarely we take time to truly listen and try to understand somebody else's point of view. And a lot of times, if you are having an issue, just sitting there listening to somebody and truly understanding where they're coming from, a lot of times that can just have the issue disappear and everything is all good. And that's all you have to do. It's just such a big power of listening. And I can tell you, it feels very good to be heard. And that is rare in time. I have been alive for many years, and I almost feel like I can count on my 2 fingers the amount of times I felt truly heard and truly understood. And to take that time and to listen to somebody and not think, what am I going to say after this? What am I going to share? And just listen and absorb what they are trying to say, what they are trying to convey, and to, of course, repeat back at them, because that's not more, instead of it being a listening technique, because that's something else I have learned in my life, is there's this listening technique where you take what the person says and, like, say, this is what I hear you say, and then say what you want to say anyway, which is not hearing, which is not understanding. I think it's an amazing thing to do. And especially at this time we are in right now, if you are listening to this in 2020, even if you aren't, I'm sure there is something in the world happening that is frightening. But at this time, just to truly listen to somebody, their fears, their pains, their vulnerabilities, and allowing someone to be vulnerable to you and feel safe in that vulnerability, there's almost no better gift that you can give them. And I appreciate Daniel for bringing that up and sharing his story on how he was able to utilize that and then create a business in helping other people live their purpose through just the power of listening and being there for people. If you want to find more about him and learn more about the Mosaic, you can go to danielbrucelevin.com and the Mosaic online. Yes, that is episode 62, folks. Thank you so much for listening to the Joyous Expansion podcast. If you like this, leave a like, review, share it, anything that can help to get it out there. It'll be fun. More people listening to it, the better I feel about my life. So I'm going to put that on you. I'm just kidding. You can find me at joyousexpansion.com. You can find more episodes at pod.joyousexpansion.com. You can find me at Joyous Expansion on LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram. Unfortunately, you have to find me at Increase Your Joy on Facebook because I don't understand search engine optimization. Once again, if you want to get in touch with me for any reason, you can email me at bre2ts@joyousexpansion.com. And I love you for who you are. Once again, I remind yourself, reminding you to be love, to be joy, to be awesome. Now play my jingle.
JoyousExpansion.com. JoyousExpansion.com. Come and say hello to Brad Dupree. He is an inspiration. motivational life coach. Good for you and good for me. He turned my life from gray to blue. I'm sure he'll do the same for you. Get in touch and you'll see your life will change dramatically. JoyousExpansion.com. JoyousExpansion.com. Yeah.